This is Jean McMillan. I am interviewing Charles Berry, who is going to talk about his educational background in Lakeville and Salisbury. Today's date is September 16th, 2023, and this is File 19. What is your name?
Charles.
Where were you born?
I was born in Dexter, Maine, April 11th, 1934, to Charles and Irma Berry, their first child. We relocated to Lakeville in 1936 when Dad took a job at Hotchkiss to teach Latin, German, and history.
Who were your parents and what did they do?
My father was Charles Berry, a member of the Hotchkiss faculty, 1936 to 1970. He taught Latin, German, and history and was also an avid photographer. My mother, Irma Berry, was librarian at Edsel Ford Memorial Library in Hotchkiss from 1964 to 1970.
And what is your educational background?
I attended Town Hill School, 1939 to 44, Salisbury Central School, 1944 to 46, for three grades, 5, 6, and 7. My close friend, Peter Gurney, another faculty brat, and I went to Salisbury School and graduated in the class of 1951. I attended Bowdoin College 1951-53 and got a degree from Babson College in 1960 in economics.
Did you have any military service?
I did. I served with the U.S. Army in Germany in military intelligence from 1954 to 1956.
And what was your career path?
I was employed in the Boston area, 1960 to 63, New Haven, Hartford, Connecticut, 63 to 75, Syracuse, New York, 75 to 80, Minneapolis, Minnesota, 1980 to 2000. I retired in 2000 and moved to Florida.
Now I'm going to ask you some specific questions. Hotchkiss, who was the headmaster?
That was George Van Sanford. He was an authority figure who observed sometimes the little stunts we faculty brats concocted, but never confronted us. He always passed the word to our fathers, who would mete out discipline.
What faculty members do you remember?
Gurney, Fowle, Demarest, Burge, Edgar, Parsons, Stakely, Murphy, Coolidge, Tabor, McChesney, Hawkins, Bulmer, Hale, and Bacon.
Do any of them stick out in your memory?
Gurney, Bacon, Coolidge, Bodell, and Stakely.
And what did the campus look like?
In those days, it was the original main building, Bissell Hall, the Infirmary, Memorial Hall, Alumni, Beeler, Coy, Headmaster's House, the Track Field House, the Golf Shop, Woods Cabins, and the Ski Jump.
What was the student population?
About 325.
Do you remember any of the staff?
At Hotchkiss, we had a staff of employees, Elmer the painter, Ben the plumber, and others, all of whom worked for John Cardoza, enigmatic bachelor who was responsible for removing the headmaster's swans from the pond on the ninth hole and penned them for the winter. Frank Ingram was the school chauffeur and had a dark green Buick sedan at his command with a plate HS10. Lee Dufour was the Hotchkiss postmaster, presiding over a kiosk of lockable boxes located in the rotunda. Then there was a man who tended the horses used for daily work and tended things in the school barn. He always befriended the faculty kids and would ride them around on the various wagons. There was a golf course employee who did all the mowing and maintenance, whose name was Ed Melius, and I think he used the name Cockrobin and may have had a musical group who played locally. Tony ran the Ford tractor and mowed the ball fields. He also had a small bulldozer which was used to scrape all the internal roads, which were not blacktopped, but surfaced with cinders created by the coal-burning powerhouse. I think I still have cinders in my knees from bicycle spills onto the cinders.
What do you remember about Lakeville?
The Jigger Shop, across from the old railroad trestle, opposite Ethan Allen Street. The Jigger Shop and Bessie's Diner were frequently used by salespeople from New Haven men's clothing stores to display things to the Hotchkiss and Salisbury students on Saturdays when they were free to go to town. Hugo's Novelty Shop had a record department where you could enter a booth and listen to your choice of music before purchase. I think there was a lot of shoplifting, as I recall Hugo, his wife, and son all hovering and watching us very carefully. It was always a required stop when in the Ville. We were required to walk to town, take a taxi, or get a ride with faculty or relatives. Riding in other personal vehicles was prohibited. Danny Lofredo had a shoe shop. He was a very pleasant man who had two boys at Salisbury Central when I was there. Perhaps they were twins. Argyle's Barber Shop, where as a small child I would sit on a board placed across the arms of the barber chair to bring me up high enough. I always got a lollipop after the haircut. I recall a men's store, the Cox Feathers, being in town for a few years. Oliver Marston, daughter was Joyce, a first heartthrob and Salisbury Central classmate, was at a local filling station as a mechanic and fixed my bicycle at no charge. The Stewart Theater was further up Ethan Allen Street. We would walk or hitch a ride, picked up returnable bottles on the road on the way, turned them in for cash to buy lunch at the Jigger Shop, and go to the movies. Movies then were 11 cents, and there were always cartoons before the matinee western.
With whom did you play?
Mostly Hotchkiss family boys. Peter Gurney was my best friend. He was the son of Richard Gurney, who was dorm master at Beeler. Teddy, son of William Stakely. Julian, son of Arch Coolidge, who taught English. And Brick Bradley, who was the son of an Indian Mountain School faculty member.
I love this next one. What did you do as preteen boys?
We were minor juvenile delinquents. We ran around campus getting into all the buildings, basements, and attics. Hunted in the woods at age 12 with real guns. Spent overnight in woods cabins, getting the carpentry employees to smuggle us beer. Industrial strength slingshots were in vogue. Peter's dad was a dorm master and used to confiscate them, but we knew we kept them and got them back. We used marbles pilfered from Barnett's store to break windows and act as snipers. We, as Salisbury Central school students, smoked cigarettes on the school bus, pinched from the Red Cross boxes we prepared for POWs in Germany. We played endless baseball, finding lost balls behind the ball field backstop, hunted for lost golf balls, and sold them back to golfers on the 8th tee, to the chagrin of the golf pro, Frank Mercer. There was sledding and skiing on the golf course in winter.
Now we're moving on to Town Hill School. Where was the school located?
It was further down the hill, close to the tee box on the number 7 hole, and adjacent to the building used by Roy Selfridge, who ran the power plant, and John Cardoza, who was superintendent of buildings and grounds. This was a two-room school, later raised in a new building built further down Route 112, and that independent school merged with Indian Mountain about 2003, as your notes.
Who was the headmistress?
I remember Miss Penelope Oyen.
And who were the teachers?
Miss Oyen and Mrs. Connie Garrity.
And how many pupils at that time?
I recall about 20.
Did you eat lunch there or go home?
I think we brought our lunches.
Salisbury Central School. Who was the principal?
Alice Eggleston, and in my last year, Paul Birch.
Who were your teachers in grades 5, 6, and 7?
I remember, this may be incorrect, I remember in fifth grade, Miss Ham, later Frances Lemoyne. Sixth grade, Mrs. Schutz. Seventh grade, Mrs. Hemmerly. Maybe 5 and 6 are reversed. After seventh grade, I got a scholarship to Salisbury School. They would award this annually to a promising seventh grader. My dad could have sent me to Hotchkiss at no charge, but chose instead to send me to Salisbury so as to avoid any conflicts that might arise with Hotchkiss teachers dealing with the offspring of a colleague.
Do you remember any classmates?
From Salisbury Central School, I remember Billy Dufour, John Garnt, John Palmer, Marcia Dowd, Mary Barton, Claude Marks.
Were you departmentalized, or did you stay with one teacher for the whole day?
I think we were pretty much with one teacher all day, but I do recall a breakout session with Mrs. Eggleston on civics.
Did you have any specialists like physical education, art, music taught by a different teacher, or did the homeroom teacher do it all?
I recall a homeroom teacher doing just about everything.
At lunch, did you brown bag it, or was there, quote, hot lunch, unquote?
There was a lunchroom run by a lady named Mrs. Blanche or Mrs. Branch. I'm not sure of that.
How did you get to school?
We were bused to school from the Hotchkiss location in a real old silver-colored Chevrolet bus run by the Dufours and driven by Jimmy Van Dusen. We called it the Cheese Box.
What was done for the war effort?
During World War II, local schools did various things to enhance the war effort. The upper grades at Salisbury Central packed Red Cross boxes for POWs in Germany. One of the items included was cigarettes. Peter Gurney, my best friend, told his dad he needed cigarettes for the war boxes, so his dad gave him 3 packs. The next morning on the school bus, we cracked a box and started smoking. We were in fifth grade at the time. Shortly after class began, we were called to the office of the principal. This is Alice Eggleston, a real iron lady of whom all the students were in fear. A first grader on the bus had tattled, "Call your parents and tell them what you did." I called home. "Mom, I was smoking on the school bus." "I'll tell your father." When I got home, my father gave me lecture 285 about the horrors of smoking and told me if I wanted to smoke, I could take my things and go live under the railroad trestle with the rest of the smokers. Other war effort stuff, I recall my dad going to a small building on Miner's Farm in Lime Rock Road, where they, with volunteers, manned an airplane watch 24/7. He wrote poetry to pass the time. Some of it was published in the Lakeville Journal. Dad was draft exempt because he was essentially blind in one eye. He was also an air raid warden, carrying a big nightstick and enforcing nighttime blackout regulations.
Now you went to Salisbury School for Boys. Who was the headmaster there?
That was George Langdon.
What teachers do you remember and why?
I recall particularly Edwin Tappert, dormitory supervisor. Salisbury had a prohibition of leather heels on shoes due to softwood floors which marred easily. Tappert was an absolute demon on enforcement. I can probably recall all of them without any specifics. Willem Kerr, Wally Herrick, Jeff Walker, Peter Ogilby, whose car would be borrowed by upperclassmen to go New York nightclubbing, and Harold Corbin and Tom Dorsey.
How many pupils were in the class of 1951?
I think there were about 30.
Were the students at that time local, Connecticut and United States, or were there some from foreign countries?
I recall one from Cuba and several from Latin America.
What was the school's atmosphere? Good comrades, rivals, hazing?
No hazing. Everybody knew everybody. School population was probably 125.
And what sports did you play?
Baseball, football, crew. I was so small, the crew folks wanted me as a coxswain. I did that in subsequent years.
Do you have any special memories from those school days?
I started in the second form, which was the equivalent of eighth grade, pretty undistinguished and did not remember much from that far back. But one year I had a roommate named Lester Tillman. Lester distinguished himself by starting a fire from smoking, which burned down an abandoned farmhouse behind the school property. I'm not sure the school authorities ever really knew what happened. We were known for exiting our rooms from the north dorm via roof gutters and fire escapes, raiding the kitchen for snacks and vanilla extract, which had a high alcohol content. We would also bring back gallons of cider from our outings, hang them out the dorm window at night, pour off the next day what did not freeze, and get an illegal buzz on.
Did you ever have a summer job locally?
Yes, I worked at the Interlaken Inn in the summer of 1958.
What did you do?
I was kitchen help, making coffee, peeling potatoes, washing pots, and telling jokes to the salad girl.
Who was your boss?
The nominal boss was the chef, but it was really Bill Peters who was general manager, and he was the family gopher.
Can you tell me anything about the Peters family?
I recall that a lot of them descended on weekends and filled many rooms.
Do you remember any other staff?
Milton Ross, or Rossman, from Falls Village was the groundskeeper. A couple of other locals were Barbara Fries and Alex Chapel.
Did you have any summer fun?
Yes, I had girlfriends among the waitresses. We went one night a week to a bar in Amenia, where some were underage for what we called group therapy.
Did you ever work at the golf course?
We lived in a house which overlooked the eighth hole on the golf course. My dad was a golfer, and I sort of emulated him by my participation, which was looking for lost golf balls on holes 8 and 9 and 1. Said balls were washed and then presented by me on the eighth hole on Saturday morning to golfers coming through in hopes of a sale. The golf pro who ran it was Frank Mercer. His wife, Jane, ran the clubhouse and supervised the caddies. Frank would arrive early on weekday mornings and drive the course backward to see if he could pick up early bird golfers who had come early to evade the entry fee collected by Jane. It was amusing to see Frank in his Chevrolet coupe bouncing over the moguls and swales. The golf ball selling came to Frank's attention as probably impacting his revenue from used balls sold at the clubhouse. Mine sold for 10 cents. His were higher. At one Hotchkiss faculty meeting, he approached my dad to complain about this impact on his income, and my dad, tongue-in-cheek, advised me that I probably should stop this effort. As a teenager, I was big enough to carry a golf bag, so took up caddying along with my friend Peter, Rich, and Lenny Golden, and others. We had our headquarters under a large tree in the parking lot where we traded swear words, had fights, and generally were rowdy until golfers appeared who wanted to take a caddy. Sequencing was generally decided by the time of arrival of each of us in the morning. Clubhouse had a coin-operated soft drink machine, which we used frequently. Jane Mercer functioned as caddy master as needed to sort things out. I recall her as being a bit intolerant. Caddy fees were $1.25 for 18 holes, 75 cents for 9. Most golfers played 18 holes and would give you $1.50 or on good occasions $2. If you caddied double, carrying two bags, you might get as much as $4 a round. If you could duplicate this in the afternoon, which was unlikely, it meant an $8 day. We were at the time going off to our summer cottage in Maine, usually in mid-June. This meant my caddying time was April to June. I was saving money to buy an outboard motor for use in Maine, and over the years I socked away $120. which was what was needed after that caddying vanished as a source of income.
Thank you very much.